reflect on us who are responsible for oversight, for us to hear it from the Honorable Judge that there's that problem, when we should be bringing this first ourselves. And I hope when Advocate Bassett and Ms. Play have heard this, because the Ministry of Justice is flooding us also with all kinds of amendments to acts, but we hear very little about the efficacy of the administration of justice itself. So I hope that this revelation will send us back to the drawing board to say, what is it that we can do differently to make sure that this type of things don't happen? But let me also take advantage of the situation to raise something that I think going forward is going to be central to our debate. Judge, I think it's common knowledge that African people were dispossessed of 87% of the total surface of South Africa and the natural resources. And the consequence is the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality, and the deepening moral degeneration and social ills. And no one can doubt that that situation produces more and more criminals. And now the Constitution gives the accused persons more rights. And that's why the budget will go to the NPA, and you need more money, which means all these resources must deal with criminality. But this criminality, as I'm indicating, stems from the land disposition of the past. Now, there are people who have claimed land from 1998, and the state is not making resources for the acquisition of land, which means that the root causes of crime cannot be addressed. And already we hear people saying, grab the land, land invasions. So I'm not a prophet, but I can tell you that there are going to be more people arrested because of land invasions, and legal aid is going to be required to provide defense to those people, and NPA is going to need more money to deal with the situation. So I think that to protect this constitution, something will have to be done, and not by yourself. I think the government and the legislatures, we will have to do something about the land question. Otherwise, we are heading into the type of a crisis which will discredit this constitution. And without this constitution, there is no South Africa. So I'm just mentioning this because I think that as parliamentarians, we can't just be happy to receive reports and not look at the root causes of the challenges that we have. So I hope that going forward, we will have to address the question of land. Yesterday, Judge and Deputy, we heard, for instance, that one family owns the whole of Polokwane. There are municipalities like Mujajiskloof, where the people are rising against the municipality because the municipality has no land to provide housing, provide services. So it has seen the landlessness is at the heart of the problems, and these criminals are manufactured from there as well. But I just want to place this on record that the ball is in the court of the politicians to deal with these matters. because you will be having crises not of your own making, and that would be a threat to the Constitution itself. Honorable members, I think we have had the reports, and thank you very much for the brilliant reports and well prepared. Honorable Horn, Honorable Mpumulwang, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Maila. Okay, Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. And once again, like in the past, a word of congratulations to Legal Aid South Africa in terms of both the style and format of the presentation and the contents. But let me say, Chair, maybe in future we as a committee should think of turning around our scheduling, because the information regarding the striking of matters from the criminal court rolls obviously would have placed us in a position to in another way engage with both the department and the NPA had we had that information beforehand. So sometimes I think we leave Legal Aid South Africa for last because we know by then we're tired and it's always good news. But maybe we should in future start off with them. But be that as it may, Chair, just three questions. On the one hand, the judge has sort of given us a bit of inside information regarding the efficiency enhancement committees, but it would be good to also generally speaking get some feedback as to how Legal Aid South Africa is experiencing the for the lack of a better word, the efficiency of the efficiency enhancement committees. We know the judge is chairing some in his capacity as a judge, but just maybe from Legal Aid South Africa's perspective, whether these committees are adding value, specifically also given the information on public record that the court hours are dwindling and the criminal justice system is struggling to maintain levels both in terms of matters handled and in terms of conviction rates and conviction numbers. And in that regard, the judge again today referred about the fact that they had to forego their relief component, and previously when we were briefed on this matter, it was said that ultimately we must understand that will have an impact also on the efficiency, generally speaking, in our criminal justice system. So I don't know whether they, after foregoing, have been in a position to measure the impact, and whether they are in a position to tell this committee in respect of both court hours and matters postponed and finalized, whether we can have some real figures and information. And then just my last question, Chair, I think earlier this week in when we met with DOJ and the NPA, referred to the masses of people or the long lines in courts of people waiting for Legal Aid applications. So previously we were informed that what was contemplated was sort of an electronic link from SAPS to Legal Aid South Africa, alerting Legal Aid South Africa even before the first court appearance of people who will be applying or who want to apply for Legal Aid assistance. So it would be good to hear whether that link has been established and whether it is up and running and working. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I just want to say, as usual, I usually get good. Maybe it's because now there are two judges. One judge, now there are two judges. is going to be, I think, better, even better. Thank you very much. I am shocked, although I didn't hear properly how this thing happened. I would be happy if you can repeat it slowly. And we also, before we leave here, what can we do to try, and maybe the chairperson could give us a guidance here. But it may not be that place only. It could be everywhere else. And how do we assist in that? Secondly, I just wanted to find out, is it also possible, and how far, if it has been started somewhere, that one can postpone the cases while people are in prison through what is this term for the new people? Autovid, that's the word. Hashtag autovisual. That system, could it, how far can it go to assist in doing that? Thirdly, of course, my passion is on the question of a language. I know I'm not, we agreed to disagree with the Chief Justice on this, that the use of the African languages, particularly in criminal cases, what is your comment on that? I believe, as I said earlier, that you either take people to justice through the English Channel, or you take justice to people in their own language. And if you agree with me, how ready is the, what is the state of readiness of the legal aid in that direction? Mainly, I can understand even in the local radio stations, the people don't speak even there the African language purely. But it's either that we let them die, we let it die, or we bring it up. I don't want to repeat this baby, but I made examples of cases where, from the beginning, when it is, the statement is taken in English by a policeman who doesn't even know the language, and it comes to the prosecutor and also goes to court. Everything is done in, it depends on the interpreter, the whole case. The interpreter's word is sometimes final, particularly when the judge doesn't know the other language. It depends entirely on the procedure, on that piece. And how far has it, is your readiness? Can you, if you agree with me on that? Thirdly, I don't want to, what can be done? I understand that you discuss with the Treasury, but do you have any amount to say, at least if we can get this amount, we can do this improvement so that we can see what can be done on our side to try and meet you halfway. Thank you very much.
The tea and coffee came late, and I don't think it's fair that we are able to stand up and grab a cup of coffee and you are not. Can we break for 5 minutes, and then those who want coffee, just help yourself. Just help yourself.
Thank you.
Members, let's resume our proceedings. I think our next speaker is Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. And, thank you, Vice President Mlambo, and the new judge, and all the new judge in the board. And thanks to the leadership of the legal aid, I think I should say this, that and I think I'm representing the committee, that we're not taking very light the amount of work that you put for the outcomes that you continue to deliver in the organization. We really appreciate that we are putting all your efforts and we are doing the best. We have, I think, when the minister was here, said that legal aid continued to be an example. And I want to repeat what I said the last time, that we may have to develop some model wherein we are able to share this good story with other institutions and other organizations that are getting funding from government. When we arrived in 2014, Chair, the vision which was set out very clearly by Judge President and the leadership was that we want to achieve that legal aid gets to be the number one law firm in this country. I think we are just close towards that if we are not there. Because I see that one of the legal aid practitioners, Tessa Gopal, got some award of being the best lawyer for whatever representation she has made. But secondly, Chair, I think I do sympathize with the issue of funding. But we did raise this with all other institutions that came here, that the issue of funding is just a problem for the entire a country. It's not only looking at the legal aid. But with the minister, when I was here, she made an undertaking around what we have raised, Chairperson, the issue of land. And when I used to work for legal aid many, many years ago, there used to be a section for land. So I don't know what has happened and how did that lose the legal aid, because I think we'd have moved serious miles now in terms of alleviating the plight of our people around the issues that relate to land. But the minister has undertaken that she will meet with the minister relevant so that legal aid takes those briefs that relate to land. I think that is an important step forward that may also assist the plight that we have. Today is the 31st of March, is the end of the financial year. So I hear when Brian was presenting, he says that by the end of the financial year, we should be at 99. So I'm getting a bit worried because today is the end. I think you would say by today we are almost at 100%, you know. But the audit outcomes that you continue to do are well commended. Now, there is this issue of case management. I think is linked to the integrated criminal justice system. I know Brian attended the meeting when we had met all the cluster portfolio related. You know, the issue that every Monday when you go to court, there's a long queue of people who came to court. They were arrested during the weekend. So I want to know, how does that affect the case management? And is it not possible, or why can't we explore the ADR mechanisms, so that most of the cases that gets there on a Monday, or the cases that we deal with, are those that need substantive issues that must be adjudicated in terms of the law. Then every Monday we take cases that drunken driving, speeding, what, and that may also delay the whole value chain in terms of the system of the ICJ that I spoke about. So I think those are my concern, the case management and our initiative of making sure that we go ADR, because ADR may resolve some of these problems that also may relate to the budgets themselves, because some of the cases do not necessarily need to us to open a file all the time. Some of them are issues that we can be able to mediate or conciliate and so on. Other than that, Chair, I think I just appreciate the work that is done by the leadership. We do not take it very light. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Honorable Bongo, I respect your relationship with Mr. Nair, but we have many Brians in Parliament, so maybe call him Mr. Nair so he's not confused with others that are here.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, Judge President Mlambo, Judge Magume, and the team for the presentations. Chair, as Honorable Bongo has said, you know, this issue of the budget shortfall leaves much to be desired, but we can only but sympathize with legal aid and other affected organs, because it has some telling consequences, you know, on the footprint, on other services. But however, I would like to commend legal aid for nevertheless continuing to have a balanced budget. Now, the budget the audit outcome here, it says it's an unqualified audit with no matters of emphasis. Is this not a clean audit? I'm just asking. No. Yes. I also wanted to check on the issue of employment equity, just to have an idea. How are we doing in terms of complying with the prescriptions of the Employment Equity Act? The issue of Palm Ridge is shocking. And as Honorable Mpumlwana has said, we would like to get it clearly so that maybe we can check if it's not a widespread kind of a cancer. Some times ago, Chairperson, we had an unfortunate experience where Legal Aid South Africa was compelled to represent people in the Marikana debacle. Now, out of that, we learned that when the executive establishes a court, the executive must fund that court. Now, I want to check if such an experience can occur once more, where the executive establishes a court and the executive does not fund that court, and legal aid is compelled to represent people. What is going to happen? Do we have something in place that will actually maybe indicate to the powers that be in the judiciary that legal aid may not be able to do that because of this and that? That's all for me, Chairperson. Thanks very much.
To speak, but I want to check if there are other hands. Honorable Majake.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to welcome the presentation from the Legal Aid Board. And to continue to congratulate you on the good work that you're doing. As usual, I'm saying it's always a pleasure listening to you and getting a presentation from you, because you never actually have anything that you'll be very worried about. For me, always when you come here, I always go to the issue of representation of women. I'd like to know as to whether there's any progress along those lines. If I have to repeat what I've said in the past, especially in, for example, maintenance cases, I said that there are women who will actually find themselves without legal representation when they are claiming for maintenance from somebody who can afford, who is not willing to pay maintenance, but is actually affording a lawyer. Can we come into this area so that we are sure that when women claim maintenance, it's always successful? There wouldn't be anything that would actually make it impossible for them to access maintenance because of the fact that they're defending themselves. Let's not allow women to defend themselves. When somebody is, when a woman is claiming for maintenance, and the man that is supposed to be paying maintenance affords the lawyer, and the woman has got to go and represent herself in court, she must be legally represented. And equally so to men, in the event the woman is the one with money, should happen the same way. But we know that the majority of the people who are suffering from this perspective is women. And also, my interest is in the numbers in terms of the cases that appear in court in South Africa as to the percentage that we successfully represent of all those deserving cases. If we can get that kind of a picture, because that actually demonstrates also impact, and it demonstrates compliance with the requirements of the Constitution. When the finances were presented, we still see that you're still leasing the building, am I right? What we have suggested to all the government departments that have come before us and state institutions is that we are recommending that you purchase these buildings. In the long run, you're not going to have in the budget these big lease amounts. You will have purchased the building, and we'll be looking at just a logistic around delivery of the mandate and the program. Yesterday when I was talking about this, the chairperson actually ended up saying, but also we've got government buildings that are just standing there empty. Why not look at any of the government buildings that are empty and renovate them so that you can then use them? Though at the same time, I said to him, the challenge is that it's as if we don't have our asset register as a government, which is something that needs to be looked at. And to also be concerned as to what happened to that asset register. And of course, the issue of consultant, we talked about it previously, and I'm just hopeful that we are using less and less of consultants, because in all government departments and state institutions, we found that a lot of money is taken up by very expensive consultants who come in and they offer the service, and they actually end up taking the bulk of the allocation of money that is provided for delivery of service. And also maybe if we can look at your relationship with paralegals, because I imagine paralegals would actually manage to add value on the work that you're doing. And as we're talking about paralegals, we can actually get into your relationship with the legal aid clinics, whether you're interested in really helping them to build capacity and something like that, because if we want to go the route of talking also about community courts, we're going to find that this kind of a service then becomes also very important. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Judge President, I think those are the questions, and I will give you the platform to deal with them.
Thank you, Chair. Let me respond immediately to what is called a bombshell. I didn't drop a bombshell. I just came to share information with the community, because this is a justice portfolio committee that looks at justice issues in the country. I used Palm Ridge as an example. It's a nationwide issue, Chairperson. Advocate Durant is here. The department collects stats. I think they've got a system. What is that system, Advocate Durant, that you use, the electronics? ICMS. They can readily tell you the number of striking offs in the lower courts. So I used Palm Ridge as an example because it's a court that falls under my jurisdiction, under my watch as the JP of the province. The first issue that arose there was the number of escapes that were happening. I had to talk to the top brass of SAPS. We met to address it, and we found that it was orderly. It was related to the availability and the competence of court orderlies. And we've addressed it. But these were high court escapes because the high court was sitting there. The problem apparently persists with escapes in the lower courts, including that court. But coming to striking offs, Chair, when I used to practice law, I'm sure Judge Magume can relate to this, you would see matters being struck off because it's been postponed several times for investigation. Nothing is happening, then it would be struck off. I don't support that, because if the investigation is not ending, someone must account why. Striking off is not a solution. But what you find these days, Chair, is there is lack of accountability for the number of striking offs that you can relate to each court. And I'm talking about magistrates, Chair. I don't want to be misquoted by the media saying I'm saying judges are striking off matters. I mean, when matters come to the high court, their case managed to run into trials and they run. You'd be surprised to find a striking off in the high court, actually. I've never heard of one. So I'm talking about what's happening in the lower courts. Now, Honorable Mpumlwana, it's a nationwide problem. My eyes were opened in Mpumalanga about this problem when I heard that in one cluster, close to 2,000 matters were struck off because an instruction came to say, if these matters have been on the roll for this period, they must all be struck off. That's when I started tracking them. So in the provinces I chair, I make judicial officers account to me why they're striking off these matters. So I would say if the committee wants to get to grips with this problem, the department collects the information relating to the lower courts, ICMS. They can periodically come to this committee and give you the number. And the courts where this is happening, I've gone to an extent where there was a problem in one court, I would not mention it, a regional court, where the prosecution complained to me to say, JP, in that court, that magistrate is striking off matters to such an extent that every day by 12 she's gone home. And then I then investigated it. That matter is currently before, I prompted the DPP to lay a charge with the commission. That matter is currently there. But then I realized that this problem is big. So I'm just saying to the committee, I'm not raising a trivial matter. It's a deep-rooted justice issue that victims of crime see crime perpetrators walking free. I come back to the Palm Ridge issue. What I was told happens there, and I met the judicial officers in charge of that court, was offenders who are in custody are brought there in the holding cells. They are not taken up to the court where they must appear. When the magistrate calls out their names, they are not there. The matters are struck off. They are in the holding cells downstairs. They are struck off. And at 3, when the truck that must take them back to prison comes, those whose matters were struck off, they are released. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I'm saying that's what happens. Yeah. I'm not going to answer that, Honorable Mpunman. And I have engaged judicial officers to say, are you unwittingly aiding corruption? I didn't accuse anyone of corruption. I'm saying, are you unwittingly aiding that? Because you must ask a question. If an awaiting trial prisoner is brought, he's in the holding cell. You know he's appearing in which court. Why is he not taken to that court? Let me end that issue there, because I'm just giving this committee what is happening. And it's a national problem. It's not just a Gauteng problem. If this committee started looking at the number of striking offs and understanding why there are these striking offs, then accountability will come back. Because as a judicial officer, I must account why I strike off matters, some of them very serious. The question asked by Honorable Horn about the enhancement committees and whether legal aid is experiencing enhancement. Previously, I raised the issue of awaiting trial detainees who spent many years in prison waiting for their matters to be finalized. I'm sure you'll remember, I raised this issue. And legal aid is instrumental in assisting the provincial enhancement efficiency committees to deal with that issue, because legal aid and the DPP together, they have the information of the matters, how long they've been on the roll, and before which magistrate. You'll be shocked to hear that there are matters that are on the roll for 9 years. They are parted. Yes. So legal aid assists through our electronic system and with the assistance of Brian's unit in terms of tracking and giving me those reports, because I then am able in the PEECs to say to the heads of those courts, why do you have so many matters that are staying in your rolls for so long? So legal aid is assisting that process to make sure that there's accountability. I hope that answers the question, Honorable Horn. The issue of using AVR, again, Advocate Durant will bear me out here. His unit is aware that they get an email from me if I don't get that report periodically, because I track the usage of AVRs in the provinces I head. Because when we started, the CJ appointed me to chair a subcommittee that produced a protocol that was going to be used by courts in using AVR. There were a number of reasons why AVR was not being used, but that problem is still there, because the appetite to use AVR is not there. So perhaps it's another issue that this committee, because the stats are there, the numbers are there, Advocate Durant will tell you. You'll see how many cases are postponed using AVR and how many are postponed in person. And there's no accountability. Why were all these people brought here if they could be dealt with through the AVR system? The information is there. I think the committee needs just to ask, and make sure that the people must account for those things, come to this committee to account for that. The other issue was the establishment of new courts. We established this principle a long time ago, Chair, that when the department builds and establishes new courts, they must factor legal aid's budget in that. Because if they want us to cover that court, we can't cover it from old money, because old money is already committed. So we've not had problems in that regard recently. No, ever since we discussed it. I think it started with when Minister Hadebe was still our minister. We've not had those problems because they now understood that they had to factor our budget in those things. Honorable Bongo spoke about the land unit at legal aid. I think that was the time when we did some land matters, but if you recall, we were struggling in this committee to justify why we would do civil matters in general. That includes land claims. And that was a struggle that spent many years before this committee, I don't mean these members today, but this committee then, accepted we have to do civil work. So, but the other development was that government took other decisions about how land matters were to be handled, and that's where we are. If we are given a budget and we understand the parameters as to how we're going to attend to these matters, I'm sure we'll be able to attend to that. So I think that answers it. Now, the issue of representation of women, and this is my last one, Chair. We all know that nationally the issue of the processing of maintenance claims is a problem. Because they are slow, files vanish. But in Gauteng, I've already engaged the judicial heads to say we must find a plan of making sure. But the root cause of that is that maintenance officers account to no one. And I've challenged the judicial heads to say, if the maintenance officers are in your court, I look to you. You can't tell me that the maintenance officer is accountable to no one. But I think Peter Advocate Durant will also tell you that there's a bill that's currently being looked at addressing that particular issue. But until that is addressed, in Gauteng at least, we are making inroads at ensuring that the stories you listen to on 702, on SAFM, of women crying on radio, of their matters not being processed, we are addressing them in Gauteng. Those are my issues, Chair. Thank you.
Advocate, Judge Magume, say something. You know, we have been saying in this committee without facts that we need lawyers with a social conscience. We need lawyers with social responsibility, because it can be only Judge President Mlambo who is aware of these things that are happening. The question is, where are the rest of us? Where are the rest of lawyers? I think we need to deal with that question at some point. What type of lawyers are we producing? Are they aware of these things? If they are aware, why the silence? Because this is a serious matter. Judge Magume.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to add an elucidation of a question that arose from Honorable Majake about the representation of women in maintenance matters. And I'm speaking from the position of an ex-practitioner and also as a judicial officer now. You must understand that there are three levels of maintenance. The first one is where a man disputes paternity. Now, that's a whole different issue. First states, I'm not the father of this child. So that man is going to get the best legal representation to represent herself. The question is whether it being a civil, more or less of a civil claim, it falls outside the maintenance act at that stage. It becomes what you call a Section 5 inquiry or something of that nature. So There, I'm not certain whether we'll be in a position to do that, but it's a good thing. But it's a position where the man says, I am not liable for maintenance because I did not father this child. That's the first level. The second aspect is where there is already a maintenance order and the woman is applying for an increment. There, I think, it's justified. And the woman says, I need more money because your children want more money for this and I want to take my child to private school. You say the child must go to school in the township, which I don't trust. And then there's always a fight there about what is reasonable or not. So, and the third level is, of course, there, the initial maintenance application, which is dealt with by maintenance officers, which correctly it's a quasi-administrative section where the maintenance officer can make a decision on himself without legal representation. But yes, we find that the man is represented, the woman is not represented. So we must differentiate between all those levels and at which stage should the legal aid be represented. And I think as to where they fit in, I'm not sure where they come from.
The second and first levels, for now, just to start, so that we don't actually create barriers. If we can start with first and the second and first level, initial claim of maintenance, and where the partner might actually request increments, and maybe not for private school, because it will be unfair to articulate it for women. It's about inflation generally when they request increase of maintenance.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I just would like to respond to the issue in relating to representation in maintenance matters. I think first up, what we must say is there's an on average, if you look over the Department of Justice statistics over the last couple of years, on average is between 200 and 250,000 new applications for maintenance every year. Now, the Department of Justice specifically have funding and get funding for these maintenance officers to be able to assist applicants in preparing the application and getting that through to the court. From a legal aid perspective, in terms of our capacity, in terms of the presentation, our capacity is about 52,000 cases per annum in civil in total. We do about, of that, 3% of that, 4% is maintenance matters where we get involved in. And there are certain circumstances that we have now set where we get involved in maintenance matters. So if the other party is legally represented and there's merit to the case for the applicant for legal aid, we will assist. And then secondly, where an applicant for maintenance for a period of 12 months, even if the other party is not legally represented, has not been able to get an order because there's abuse of the system's not working, then we provide legal representation. And also where they have already got an order, but they're not able to enforce the order and haven't been able to get the maintenance, even in those circumstances we've opened that we will provide legal representations. So even in terms of the regulations that we will discuss later, you'll see there's a specific provision where we say where we will help in terms of maintenance. And that has been the case for quite a while. It's just very difficult to open it up in terms of those numbers of 200 to 250,000 a year without additional capacity. But we have made available in those circumstances. So where the other party is legally represented and the applicant qualifies in terms of the means test, even sometimes we have discretions at the region. So they may even exceed the means test. And I, in terms of some of it, the final decision on whether we assist or not, specifically where there's a vulnerable group, women, children, and you look at the particular circumstances, although they may exceed the means test, there are instances where we will approve legal aid, even in the circumstances where they exceed the means test, particularly looking at the particular circumstances, and they require sympathetic consideration if you look at the totality of their financial position.
I'm just going to respond to a few, and then my colleagues will respond to the rest on the issue. Sorry, you wanted to say something?
I called on him, Mr. Rogan, on the But if he wants to say something, it's welcome to do so. But it was my mistake.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Perhaps just one or two remarks. I think I can just underscore what Judge President Malambo was indicating in terms of numbers of cases that are being struck overall. We will, from the department side, give this committee information in this regard as to what is the current trend countrywide in terms of this, so that they can have that. Secondly, just in terms of the audiovisual remand cases, AVR, I'm happy to indicate that we set a target of about 12,000 cases for this year, this financial year, and we've met that target. In actual fact, we've exceeded that target. But there is a challenge, and as correctly pointed out by the Judge President, there is a lack of appetite from role players, specifically from prosecutors, but also from magistrates, to deal with this. And I think we need to be honest and frank about this. If we don't get that support, then all these wonderful technological solutions that we are putting in place cannot bear fruit. There is, I think, more than enough scope to extend the AVR to other areas, etc. But obviously we will need to get that type of assistance. We've asked the Chief Judge to in actual fact, approve directives to the magistrates regarding AVR, and we are awaiting that. And I think once we get that, it might assist in getting more appetite from the role players to deal with these sort of things. In terms of the other aspects, if there are specific information required, we will assist. In terms of maintenance, I can just endorse what Patrick has indicated in terms of the numbers of that. What we've done from the department is also to make the Family Advocates Office now more involved with maintenance matters, so that we look at the divorces and maintenance at the same type of issue, same time. And hopefully that will also bear some fruit in future. But once again, I think in terms of maintenance and how it's been dealt with, we can give a report from the department side to this committee. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, Chair, I'm going to respond to the issues of the budget. We were asked whether if we had to require additional funds, what would it be? And I think I want to start with where it links to our budget cuts. If we look at it, we said that in the next 3 years we would have a budget cut of 200 million rand. So we actually didn't come to the committee to say that this is the amount of money we need, because we were told in no uncertain terms by Treasury that there's no money. So I'm starting with that. But because we are asked about it, I'm clarifying that the budget shortfall that we have of 200 million plus over the next 3 years, if that was taken away, that means we didn't have to have a shortfall. That would help us, because it is going to result in, over the next 3 years, us having to reduce at least 100 posts, which 100 posts in our case are warm bodies that are linked to service delivery, because we're not carrying high vacancies. We have a very low vacancy rate. We have, and also that we have, as I explained earlier, very, very high efficiency levels. So we can't keep cutting the operating budget, although we indicated that in the next year we still kept our operating budget to zero increases, except where there's contractual obligations. So with all of that, if we were able to not have that shortfall, it would help. Secondly, I want to talk to the issue of land. I agree that, and we have talked about it in this committee, that it is a very important issue, and I am glad that the minister has undertaken to speak to the relevant minister to see what role we can play, and to say that if we can play a role, that will have to be phased over a period, because we will have to build up that capacity. We don't have that capacity currently, but we do have the capacity to deliver services. And lastly, I want to talk about the issue of paralegals. We do have a good cooperation with the national, with ECOWASA and NetCare, the organizations that are working with paralegals. We ourselves employ about 200 paralegals through whom we provide advice services. But I just want to clarify that we're not in a position to take on the issues that are being raised in terms of funding of paralegals, because we are a service delivery organization. And I think it will change our focus if we have to now get involved in managing the delivery of funds to people. So I want to just place that on record, because I have heard it being said that the money gets channeled through legal aid. four advice officers, and I don't think that's a good idea, and I think that will have to be discussed a lot more before we can get to such a position, because excuse me, the requirements for that is totally different. And because we're doing well, we could do well in terms of delivery. That doesn't mean we can do well in terms of anything else. And having said that, but we do have a very strong cooperation with advice officers where we provide a service where they can refer matters that then need lawyers to us. So we have that link, an ongoing link, and our civil practitioners link with them and are able to provide. We also provide capacity to them in terms of assisting them to set up management information systems, etc., so that they can track the number of matters they're doing and they are using that. We're also sharing assets that we have to, that in terms of our management systems, where we have to dispose of assets. We have linked them to make that available to advice officers and those NGOs doing legal-related work, so that it actually still continues to increase access to justice. So that's the kind of cooperation we have. So I'll just stop there. And I wanted to clarify that in terms of the question that was asked about commissions of inquiry, which was in terms of new courts, but actually I think you were focusing on where like things like commissions were being set up by the executive that they must fund it. We agree, and we amended our policy to make that more explicit, to say that that we can only fund in instances where there is such funding. Otherwise, we won't be able to fund, especially because we are committed to provide funding in those matters where we will have a final outcome that is binding, whereas in commissions, what you have is that you can have recommendations which somebody else has to take forward. So if it goes to a civil case, etc., we can help, but we can't help in that commission at the commission stage. And although we've incorporated that, we haven't had any new such requests which have tested it, but you will recall that the Constitutional Court itself had said that, well, that matter was resolved now and it was no longer an issue for them to rule on, but that it had to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. So that helped us clarify that it wasn't a blanket thing that meant that everybody who now wanted money for commissions could get the money. It would have to be dealt in that way. And in the meantime, we did change our policy to make it clearer also. So in terms of a few things, I think I'll start with Brian and then Jerry, and then we can wrap up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just picking up a few points. I think issues raised by Honourable On. I think JP covered the issue of the Efficiency Enhancement Committee, but just to give a perspective from management in terms of our experiences of these committees, we find that a lot depends on the leadership of the committee. And invariably, the leadership is the judiciary. And where the head of the committee is enthusiastic and gives commitment to it, it works really well. Where they don't give it that energy, then it doesn't add that value. What we found is that, as JP mentioned, the work we're doing with RDs does have significant impact when those issues on the agenda is given the prominence. So we think it's a good thing. More and more of those committees need to function effectively, and we try to contribute as effectively as we can. With regard to the impact of the relief component, we are only going to terminate at the end of this financial year, which is now, and we're starting to scale back. But we know, Chairperson, that when legal aid is not present at certain courts, that courts don't function. And the mere fact that we're now taking away that capacity will mean that those courts, whilst previously were able to deliver a few matters and close a few matters on the days, will now stand still waiting for legal aid to come. So it will have an impact in those courts. With regards to the link between SAFS and Legal Aid South Africa in terms of the when persons are arrested, I'm happy to say that the IJS has actually spent time and money developing that link. And in fact, we are able to receive on our systems information with regards to arrested persons who may require legal aid. Unfortunately, it requires an enhancement on our system to be able to use the information that we receive. And because we are in this process of changing systems at the moment, we are now speccing our new system to be able to receive that feedback. But what the feedback invariably entails is getting information from the police as to which courts arrested persons would go to. But we don't know upfront which courtroom, for instance, they'll be. So the usefulness of the information would be more in terms of data capturing and alerting us in advance of potential clients of us at courts. And over time, as that link is developed, we'll see how else we can use it. With regard to Honorable Bongo's question on case management and ADR, I'm sure the NPA would have provided committee with statistics in terms of ADRs. We also do get involved in terms of matters where clients of ours are being offered, or we engage with the prosecution in terms of our negotiation strategies to actually get cases out of the system. We monitor this. We can give fair stats in terms of the percentage of cases that are finalized through ADR. At the moment, in terms of without the full figures, I would imagine about a quarter of our withdrawals are through ADR, using ADR. Thank you.
Chairperson, responding to Honorable my last question on employment equity, our employment equity plan, which we have submitted to the Department of Labor, was made in 2015, and that was subsequent to a review of our employment equity of the past 5 years, which shows some significant improvement. But in the main, if I were to report as at the end of December 2016, we have executives, 16 executives, and 8 of them are women, that is 50%, and 1/4, that is 4, are African. And I should even indicate to say that the 8 executives, which are women, are generally black. Going further to that, in terms of women for the whole organization, the whole footprint, we have already exceeded the national target by 8.46%. So we are already above that. In terms of people with disability, a target of 2%, we are currently at 1.7%, which we are still running short of a 0.3%. We will be managing it going forward towards 2020. Blacks generally in the organization, we are still below by 2%. And Africans generally, we are still below by just below 5%. So in the main, those are the percentages that we are managing in terms of our statistics, but we are quite confident that where there is an opportunity to make any other change, we would effect it as such. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. If I may discover, sorry, the issue of languages and the use of African languages in court, and any comment that we may have on this. In fact, Legal Aid in South Africa has actually recently approved a policy on languages. We subscribe to the view that clients must be engaged in the language of their choice in terms of when we consult with them. So we actually offer all clients the opportunity to talk to us in the language that they are comfortable with. Where our lawyers are not au fait with the language, then we try to actually incorporate interpreters or assistants to actually help us with the translation. But in terms of our clients, we encourage them to communicate in the language that they're most comfortable with in their consultations with us.
I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the procedures in the African languages, court procedures in the African languages. I was asking whether do you agree that it is the best way to go? And if so, how ready, the state of your readiness for your practitioners to participate in the African languages? That's what my question.
Chairperson, if I draw on our experiences with a pilot project that the department ran some time ago on indigenous language courts, and what we found in that case is that we were able to capacitate those courts with practitioners who spoke the languages that were most frequently used in those courts. So at the moment, we don't think that it will necessarily be a problem for us to actually serve courts in the language that of the client, or sorry, in the language that is earmarked at those courts. So from our side, I would imagine that we will adapt our operations to align itself to whatever the language of the court is. We think that from a viewpoint, we think that it will be positive in terms of the client, from a client perspective, that cases are done, it will lead to more efficiencies. At the moment, the dual translation actually consumes a lot of time, and it will lead to, hopefully it will lead to speedier cases. There will obviously be issues regarding the record of language, and that's something that will have to be attended to. Thanks.
Judge President, generally, people who give facts about situations easily end the title controversial. But I'm also one of those who don't worry whether anybody thinks I'm controversial or not. I think that the truth must be said. There are so many institutions that come before us asking for money. When we try to find out what is the money for, we are told that they want to be visible on the ground. I'm not sure that Parliament staff should be addressing members of Parliament. I'm not sure about that. What you are doing is out of order. You are not running a catering company. When we try to find out what they need the money for, it's visibility, and that visibility including building more and more offices in the provinces, in the regions, and despite the fact that Bonan, maybe there is a plot by the Parliament staff to disrupt the meeting. despite the fact that there are so many empty government buildings belonging to the municipalities, to the provinces, to national government, people want to build new offices all over. And my view is that all those buildings they're talking about don't add value to what we want to achieve, which is service delivery. It's all about the comfort of the people that want to use those offices. Now, I think this committee has been discussing your needs for too long, and we are lamenting that you don't have enough resources. I don't think that we can end up there. I want to make a recommendation, and I think that recommendation, when we report to the National House, the Assembly, we must put that, let Parliament reject it and take the responsibility. I think that Legal Aid South Africa, of all these institutions, is the most deserving of support, and that this committee resolves that you need to be given the resources that you need, because we are able to see value from the work that you do. But I want to be specific also here that the land unit that Honorable Bongo was talking about, we must specifically say that that land unit must be re-established with a special budget. And what would be the budget for? I would say that budget should be for all land claims, because delivery of land will actually sustain or destroy this democracy. There are people who are saying Section 25 of the Constitution is a problem. Let's change Section 25. By the time we finish changing Section 25, the country will be on fire. There are things that we can do now to address the situation, and that includes making money for land claimants, giving that money to Legal Aid South Africa, and get them to be the one that fund the lawyers that do land claims. There is also, for instance, money that the department has given to Center for Applied Legal Studies for evictions. There's money that the department has given to Chidle & Thompson's for land claims. All those funds, which in my view have been privatized by government, when government has Legal Aid South Africa, should be transferred to Legal Aid South Africa, because that is a state institution and it will not have the conflict of interest that private law firms allowed to distribute these resources would have. So I want to suggest to these honorable members that we make this resolution that Legal Aid South Africa, of all these entities, should be given the budget they want, but have also a special budget to reestablish the land unit, that all these things about land claims must go to them, because amending the constitution, amending the laws, is going to take long and we are going to be overtaken by events. Now, on the question of strikes, striking of cases, I think I'm happy Mr. Bassett is here. I think the Department of Justice owes us an explanation whether or not they were aware of this situation. And if they were aware, because they appear before us more often than anybody else, why have they been silent on this matter? I'm not quite sure what the brief of the magistrate commission is, but also we need to find out. Is the magistrate commission appears before us about suspending magistrates, but nothing else? So we would want to know what is their brief, what are they doing about these matters. Now, lastly, on the language question, I think government is to blame, because it is government that closed down the departments of African languages at all universities. But we still have the Department of Arabic, we have Portuguese, we have Greek, we have Hebrew. All the foreign languages are still taught at our universities, but the African languages are not taught. And then we go to the judiciary and say, why don't you use African languages in the courts? How will the judiciary use African languages if African people themselves cannot even finish one sentence in an African language? They will mix their sentences with English, with Afrikaans, because we ourselves as government are undermining these languages. So I think that we should call on government itself to reestablish those African languages departments, teach our people their language, then we go to the courts and say the courts must be run in the African languages. Because if the judge is black, the prosecutor is black, everybody, all court officials are Africans, and then we run the courts like we are in London, what does that mean? we say people don't respect us. How would they respect us when we don't respect our ourselves? So my view is that this issues also touches on transformation, because the transformation has got to be comprehensive. So I propose that this committee support the budget proposals of Legal Aid South Africa, and we take the matter into the National Assembly itself. They must make a decision. Honorable Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I support the proposal. But also I wanted to fully also support the full report on the matters that are strike off the roll in the lower courts of South Africa and the reasons thereof. And also to say with the same breath that we should actually also impress upon the Magistrates Commission to take immediate action against magistrates in the lower courts who are involved in these matters. And somewhere I heard a Judge President saying she takes the matters off the road. It worries me, because I have been an advocate of women through and through. Even when women magistrates are getting suspended, I always put big questions. I would be worried if it's found that it's a woman magistrate also who's doing this. But no matter who it is, whether it's wrongdoing, action must be taken. So we also wish to impress upon the Magistrates Commission to take immediate action against those magistrates. Thanks.
I was just wondering, I didn't know what is the next step. I think the Legal Aid said they have got no money. They have run short of money, and they were not given more money. We have not said anything to them regarding that. Are we saying hard luck? I'm asking the chairperson now, what can be done?
That before we consider any other requests for money, we must boldly recommend that legal aid must be given the money, because you see, even those who call for the amendment of the Constitution, they lose sight of the fact that the Constitution provides for more support to criminals than to civil litigants, especially those who are claiming land. And that is a time bomb, because people will start gripping the land, the courts will be overflooded, there will be a breakdown of law and order, and that will mean a breakdown of the constitutional order. So the only institution that can save us now, before it's too late, is legal aid, and we must give them money to address that, because we can't solve the problem by amendments of constitutions of laws. That will come at their time. But the immediate requirement is that we support Legal Aid South Africa, get money to do the work, and we know they're doing it very well. Honorable Horn?
Yes, Chair, I just want to say that we must also be very careful not to, without getting behind the story properly, decide that only magistrates are to blame for striking these matters from the roll. Obviously, if magistrates are briefed that accused persons are downstairs in the holding cells and they're still struck off the roll, then that's something that must be addressed. But ultimately, it's not the duty of magistrates to ensure the presence of these persons in the courtrooms. So there may be another level of failure there, in that either the NPA or the department is frustrating the process by not ensuring the presence of these people in courtrooms. So it's not as simple as simply saying
magistrates necessarily are to blame. So I would just urge that while we must be obviously very worried about this tendency of matters being struck from the roll, be very wary to just pronounce judgment as a committee before having all of the facts.
Okay, this is happening in the magistrates' courts, and we are saying there are people who withhold the accused inside so that they don't appear before the magistrates. And that's why we are saying that the department owes us an explanation. So we are not apportioning blame on anyone. We are saying that the situation is happening at that level, and we want an explanation. And maybe if we could say the department must give us a report of what happened during the past 2 years, and based on that we may also call for a commission of inquiry whether we still have the administration of justice at that level or is some kangaroo arrangements that are happening. So this is a serious matter. Honorable,
I heard your promises, but I just want to know the what are we going to do, when, and how much are we talking about? That's all I'm asking.
The committee is going to deliberate. We have a very clear reports before us, and the needs are documented. I think all that we can say for now is that we wholeheartedly support the request, will deliberate, and then come out with a concrete, well-formulated proposal that we will also present to the National Assembly. Pardon?
I was saying that I'm sure the judges will assist in that.
Okay.
Petition.
Everybody is praising us that we have the best constitution, the best judges, but all that can come to naught if we don't do the simple things, making sure that the administration of justice runs well, not only because we have good judges, but court officials, the police, and that's why we talk about the integrated justice system. And we have been saying that the Department of Justice is leading that sector. But also, we have question marks. We are calling a joint workshop of all the departments involved in that system to tell us. It appears some of them are not on board. So we really need to deal with these issues. Any other thing, honorable members? Now we have draft regulations. Maybe
about the list. I didn't get the comment about it.
The what?
List. Chair, I'll respond to that. The issue of property. We have over the last few years tried to see what property we can buy. That our national office at Legal Aid House is actually purchased. We own it. And then we have a presence at 135 sites across the country. And what we did is in the past few years, we had requested Treasury to allocate funds that we were rolling over to this. And with that, we are in the process of finalizing purchases to about 7 properties. So of the 135, only 7 at this stage. And I don't think that there is any more funds in this period due to the financial constraints. So what it will also do is it will give us an opportunity to look at how to manage those properties so that in future when funds become available, we'll be able to improve on that so that we then don't have the problem. The bigger problem we have in relation to the properties is the issues of finding appropriate premises which are accessible to clients, especially at
places like where we have our satellite offices, which are the more remote areas, but also that are closer to courts so that we can service the courts. So that's the kind of problems, and also related to that, we have problems relating to landlords being compliant with the CSD requirements of Treasury, so they're not registered, they're not tax compliant, so that makes it that makes our procurement of services from them irregular. And those are the kinds of things that we are trying to deal with in trying to purchase properties and get over that. So that is the process that we have embarked on. And on the issue of consultants also, that question you asked, I think that we agree with you totally that in terms of consultants that we should reduce them. We actually, as Legal Aid, our approach is that our executives, and they know that, are employed to because of their skills, and they must use the skills. They're not there to manage consultants, and so we don't use a lot of consultants except in specialist services like IT or certain kinds of training which we can't do ourselves in-house, and we manage that because that's also a requirement through a consultant's reduction plan, and we monitor that closely. But overall, a large part of our budget is not allocated to consultants. So in any event, we weren't in that category where we had to reduce a large amount. It's only very specialized skills like IT support or something that we would use consultants and specialized training. Thank you, Chair.
This is Venda Alanka. I want to associate with your ideas on advice centers and paralegals. I don't think that we should crowd you with those kinds of responsibilities. We have, for instance, a foundation for human rights. Maybe we must make that foundation responsible for that area of work. And also, I think the practitioners are holding us hostage with the result that the paralegal legislation is not coming here, and we need to pass a paralegal law which will regulate these matters, and then maybe even that funding can be dealt with there. But I want to agree with you that I don't think that you should be given that responsibility, otherwise we are going to create unnecessary challenges for yourself. But I think the meeting was short, but the most fruitful meeting, and we must thank you for your preparations. Honorable members, can we leave matters there? Honorable Mutapo? Those are in-house matters. In-house matters.
But they are on record. Please, Chairperson.
I was talking to the official.
Actually, I was talking to him. Please, with due respect.
Okay, I apologize. But I meant staff cannot be doing catering when the meeting is session. That's why I apologize, because I thought it was catering. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the presentation. Thank you. Yes, Chair, I may not be able to remove my laptop if I require it. Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Firstly, I would like to express our gratitude to you for placing the matter on the agenda for today. As you are aware, we have submitted the regulations to the committee to consider on an informal basis before we submit it formally through the minister for your consideration. That is purely to save some time and to give the committee an opportunity to consider the regulations and to inform us if there are any changes that they would like to make to the regulations. And I think that in starting the presentation, it's important to give some context to what where the regulations come from, and also to highlight a certain problem we've encountered with regard to the time frame with, that we had in which to get the regulations approved by Parliament. The regulations emanate from the Legal Aid South Africa Act, which came into operation in 2014. It repealed the outdated 1969 Legal Aid Act. The policies and procedures for the provision of legal aid are currently set out in the Legal Aid Guide that was issued by the Legal Aid South Africa under the repealed Act. As a transitional arrangement, the new Act provides that the existing Legal Aid Guide remains in force until it is withdrawn and repealed by regulations and the Legal Aid Manual is made in terms of the new Act. In terms of the new Act, the first regulations and Legal Aid Manual must be made and published within 24 months after commencement of the Act, which in other words was the 1st of March. This deadline was not met. The processes and procedures which was required to get the regulations finalized took too long, which gave rise to the unfortunate delay. In that regard, we set out to check on the status of the existing regulations made in terms of the existing manual and the guide in terms of the old Act, which has been repealed. We got two legal opinions, one from the Chief State Law Advisor and the other from private counsel, which was obtained by Legal Aid South Africa. The State Law Advisors say that the current set of regulations has expired because the Act has been repealed, and unfortunately that is the end of the matter for them. However, the other opinion from senior counsel states that when you look at the transitional arrangement in the new Act, it gives life to the existing regulations until a new set of regulations is made. And I just want to state that both the Department and Legal Aid South Africa agree with the opinion obtained from senior counsel in the matter. And this conclusion is that the conclusion that we've arrived on the basis of this opinion has resulted in Parliament being approached and requested to finalize the matter as soon as circumstances permit. So in terms of the Act, Chair, the regulations arise out of Section 23.1 and 23.2 of the Act. The Minister must, after receipt of recommendations from the Board of Legal Aid SA, make regulations relating to the types of matters, both civil and criminal, in respect of which Legal Aid South Africa provides legal aid, does not provide legal aid, and provides legal aid in limited circumstances, and the manner in which it does so. The criteria that an applicant must comply with in order to qualify for legal aid and the terms and conditions on which legal aid is made available to the applicant. The policy relating to the approval or refusal of legal aid, the termination of legal aid and appeals against refusal or termination of legal aid, and any matter which is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of the Act. Any regulations must, before publication thereof in the Gazette, be tabled in Parliament by the Minister for approval, and therefore we are presenting this document to you today. Section 24.1 of the Act provides that the Board must compile, amend, and approve a legal aid manual relating to the procedures in terms of which applications for legal aid are administered, the systems and methods whereby legal aid is delivered, the requirements and criteria for the accreditation of private legal practitioners who render legal services to legal aid recipients on the instructions of Legal Aid SA, and terms and conditions. and the regulation of any other administrative matter. In preparing the regulations, before they were finalized and approved by Legal Aid South Africa, several parties were consulted, among them the Rules Board, DTI, DPSA, National Treasury, the BLA, NADEL, etc. Comments were received from only two parties, namely the Cape Bar Council and the National Bar Council of South Africa. The regulations read with the manual do not change the current position as provided for in the Legal Aid Guide, and I think this point is important because we are now regularizing what is in existence already, and these the existing regulations came into effect in 2014, and it was ratified by Parliament in terms of Section 3A of the 1969 Legal Aid Act. The procedures and policies as contained in the regulations and the manual are similar to the guide, and there are therefore no budgetary and staffing implications which are different from what already exists. The regulations empowered by the Act are intended to provide detail on policy matters relating to the provision of legal aid, which may change from time to time as circumstances change. For instance, the amounts which need to be adjusted in order to keep pace with inflation. Each of the 39 regulations is discussed below in chronological order. Most of the regulations are self-explanatory. During the discussion, we will refer to some policy issues, and which include, for example, the means test in Regulation 27 and the types of matters which qualify for legal aid. The types of matters which qualify for legal aid are dealt with in terms of general principles, exclusions, limitations, and inclusions. A document which provides further detail on the provision of legal aid can be made available as well. I'm now going to hand over to Mr. Bassett to take us through each regulation.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and good morning, members. The regulations, I think there are 39 of them all in all. I would like to think that they are pretty straightforward in the wording, and it's quite difficult to say in the presentation something that's different. If you read the regulations, what I'm going to say is really a repetition of what is already in the regulations. We worked very closely with Legal Aid South Africa in the preparation of the regulations, and I want to highlight what Mrs. Kale said. The regulations as they are here in principle are the same as what you find in the present guide, which was approved in by Parliament in 2013. So nothing's changing really. But if the committee want me to, I can go through the regulations and try and highlight some of the aspects of each of the individual regulations, starting with Regulation 1, if I may go ahead.
I think you don't have to protest because there was a request whether or not you should highlight. I think what we should simply be saying is that, yes, highlight. So it shouldn't come across as a protest against him because he made a request. I think the members unanimously agree that just highlight.
Thank you, Chair. Starting with Regulation 1, they're pretty self-explanatory. They deal with definitions. I would like to highlight perhaps two definitions, and that's household and spouse. Household means family members, spouses, partners, children, and parents who live together. And spouse means a person married in terms of the Marriage Act or the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act or in terms of the Civil Unions Act. I think that's an important aspect. Regulation 2 sets out a general policy relating to the provision of legal aid as a matter of course. For instance, it says that legal aid is only available to natural persons and to persons.
Advocate Bassett, if you can just do the highlighted areas. If we want you to go into detail, we'll ask you to.
Thank you. Okay. I'll do that. Regulation 3 provides for the provision of legal aid to sentenced or detained person or an accused person in criminal trials if it's likely that such person would suffer substantial injustice. What is substantial injustice? For instance, a term of imprisonment is likely. Regulation 4 allows legal aid to be granted to a witness in certain circumstances.
namely where the witness has been warned by the court to provide incriminating evidence against himself or herself. In terms of Regulation 5, legal aid can be granted to a person in an extradition matter, and Regulation 6 deals with criminal appeals, and a legal aid may be granted in certain circumstances. In terms of Regulation 7, legal aid may only be granted for one bail application. Then we're moving on to Regulation 8, and it prohibits the granting of legal aid to an accused person who does not qualify for legal aid in terms of the regulations unless this is directed by a court in terms of, by court order in terms of Section 22 of the Act. And Regulation 9 sets out the circumstances in which legal aid may be granted for civil matters. For example, if the matter has good prospects of success based on a written merit report.
Mr. Bassett, I can see why the members are not happy. It's 20 to 12, and they're going to miss their flights. Just deal with things that are new, and you don't have to remind us what the regulation provides for. Just highlight what is new, and then we deal with that, because we need to determine whether or not we agree.
Thank you, Chair. I might I'd just like some guidance from or assistance from Legal Aid South Africa. There's nothing new. Everything is the same as it was in the, as it is in the guide. So there is nothing new. But maybe some of the important aspects, seeing that there is nothing new, is to refer to the means test and to have a look at the limitations and exclusions, if that would suit.
Annika, for now.
Chair, unfortunately, when we last presented the 2014, which is now currently the 2014 Legal Aid Guide, we did that, I think, to this committee in October 2013 and then in November 2014 to the Select Committee. In terms of what we've provided for in these regulations, we have taken exactly what was in the guide and brought it into the regulations, and it really takes the policy issues in terms of what we provide legal aid for, both in criminal matters. So we list those in for the district court, which matters we will help with. That hasn't changed from there. There are one or two crimes that no longer really exist as a result of certain constitutional court judgments, and we've removed those. For regional court, high court, there's no limitations as to the matters we would assist in. In civil matters, in terms of what we have done is exactly as it is in the current legal aid guide, as I mentioned, where it was already in the guide that we provide legal representation in maintenance matters where the other party is legally represented in this merits, and where the party has not been able to enforce it, we provide it. There are very specific provisions also in regard to the representation of children, specifically to comply with the obligations in terms of Section 28(1)(h). So those are all then contained in the regulations. The other critical element that we look at is regard to that is then the means test. Who qualifies in terms of the means test and what the criteria is? It's still the same means test. We haven't at this stage increased it. So it's based on an individual at 5,500 and for a household at 6,000 after deduction of tax. There are, however, three levels of discretion built in for the head of the office of up to 1,500 Rand over the means test. That's in terms of the income. For the regional exec, they can go 3,000 Rand over the means test. In civil matters, there's a final appeal to the chief legal executive in particular circumstances that can get exercised, and everyone is informed of their right to those appeals. In criminal matters, even if you exceed the means test, there's a specific committee that's provided for that then considers it, and there's a contribution policy, but that was all dealt with in the previous guide. So I think those are the main elements in regard to the means test, in terms of the types of matters. And then also in terms of civil matters, we only provide legal aid if there are merits. But sometimes you do have the 50-50 cases, and we have brought in a provision there that in instances we can provide legal aid to both parties in civil matters, specifically where they both have an arguable case, because you don't want to have a situation that someone
has an arguable case, and that you say, well, we can only give one party, and which party do you exclude? So that is one specific slight amendment that we have included in the regulations that wasn't in the previous guide, although the board had approved it, and we had distributed that by circular. So I think that, in essence, you will also see from the committee's perspective, and I think an important one to raise, is in regard to the land issue. So we've brought in the land issue saying that we can do it, subject to us getting to the funding. So I think we've addressed the committee's concern in that. It is in the regulation. So if the funding is made available, we're really empowered in terms of the regulation to be able to do that. So, and I think that's an important issue to bring to the attention of the committee. And then I think those are the main things. The children I've dealt with. Commissions of inquiry, once again, we've clarified it and clarified the policy to saying if the establishing authority establishes they require, we will can assist, but as long as they make the funding available to us. The difficulty for us is these things are happen on an ad hoc basis, and our budget doesn't generally include funding for that, and so it's very difficult to otherwise provide for it. And, Chair, I think so those are the critical issues I think I would like to bring to the committee's attention.
I think I must actually apologize to both you and Advocate Bassett, because now I am putting you to pressure because of our time constraints, and I know you took time to prepare, and then you come here, we don't have time, and because it's a Friday, maybe Judge President, next time we won't bring you on a Friday, we'll find a suitable date to bring you. But I just want to make one observation with regard to Regulation 17 and 18. 17 says legal aid may be granted for cases relating to land rights. But Regulation 18 limits the scope by referring to labor tenants. And the situation in this country is that African people who have been driven away from the land, they were refusing to work on the land because the salary was the right to sleep there and to eat. And the farmers brought foreigners to work on the farm. So we may be then, this by talking about land tenants, be protecting the foreigners, some of them who are even illegally on those farms. I think the critical issue is providing legal aid to the people who have been driven away from the land, who want the land restituted to them. And the money that we need is not the money for labor tenants, is the money for the restitution of land to the people. So if we approve this regulation as Regulation 17 and 18, it means we ourselves, we are saying that we are satisfied with money made available to protect the labor tenants. I'm not saying the rights of labor tenants are not important, but the most important situation we are dealing with is the restitution of the land to the people, because even the problem of labor tenants will cease to exist. So I don't know how, honorable members, we want to deal with this. Honorable Maile, this question of making legal aid available to protect the rights of the labor tenants, but not the rights of the labor, the land claimants. I'll take you, Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Bongo.
Maybe we should just leave it at land rights. And then in that way, it will actually also cater for land claimants rather than just restrict it to tenants.
Honorable Mutapo?
I'm covered.
Okay.
On the issue of land claimants in terms of restitution.
Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think the matter we are raising is covered by Regulation 17, because Regulation 18 speaks about something else. It does not limit Regulation 17. Yeah, so 17 covers the issues that we are worried about, but 18 does not limit. 18 speaks about another category of people that are there. So I think we can leave it at this, and it assists us to also take further engagement with the Department of Rural Development.
Is that your understanding, Honourable Advocate Bassett? Is that your understanding that the two are not linked?
That's correct.
So the only issue then is that for Regulation 17, we link it with the need for a budget. That money must be made available, not from the existing resources of legal aid, because there's no money there. Okay. Honourable?
Chairperson, but the process there at the Regional Land Claims Commissioner is very much cumbersome on this issue, the same issue of legal aid funding for legal claimants.
Well, yes. Proposal, can you make a proposal?
So I don't know how then I can put it, but it was going to be better if we can find a mechanism, or maybe they can assist in the issue of coining it in such a way that legal aid also, in a way, provide for such land rights in cases of restitution. Because the process there, really, I'm telling you.
Can't we say that's a valid matter that we are raising, but we deal with it as a separate issue so that we don't subject this thing to that cumbersome process. So we'll put it on our agenda. But for now, we're happy with this, with the understanding that legal aid for land rights means that money must be made available for that purpose. Nobody must go to legal aid and say, the regulations say you must provide funding for this, because there's no such funding. Okay. Honorable Maina?
On the means test, I'm looking at this thing. It was started somewhere in 2014, it's now 2017. And I would like to check if the value of 6,000 in 2014 is still the value of 6,000 now. Because I believe maybe we should up it a bit. That's my proposal, maybe to 10,000. We haven't updated that amount, so that's a valid concern raised. But what we used to do in the past, with the guides, and I think we can do that now, is annually to look at whether the values we have in these things are still current or whether they need to be updated or not. I think that would be an approach.
I think want to Mr. Yes. If I heard you very well, I think you said something that is was very, very progressive. But even though a person does not qualify in terms of this test, but there will be another committee that it is not hard and fast. It will still look at the merits and demerits. And I think that makes me so comfortable that access to justice would be a matter of certainty to our people. Thank you.
Chairperson, we are aware that the law doesn't allow a vacuum, and unfortunately there is a very serious delay because they were supposed to be publicized within 24 months, the regulations, because the legal aid manual will no longer be in place. So because the regulations generally are addressing the issues which we raised during the process of the new act, promoting transformation agenda, catering for legal aid in cases of involving children and women and farm workers, I'm just a bit concerned on the issue of the other vulnerable sector, domestic workers, apparently not covered. But generally, it's very much progressive, and therefore I proposing that we give it a go-ahead. Yes, a thumbs up, yes.
In terms of the funding being available just for one bail, is it one bail per case?
Yes, we provided that there's for one bail application, but we have provided for a discretion for the head of the office to authorize another one if they're satisfied that there are changed circumstances and that there are merits.
Yes, just procedurally speaking, I don't think we can approve this if this has not been officially tabled. My understanding was that this was to suss out the feeling of the committee, but it's yet to be tabled by the minister who has the responsibility in terms of the act.
I understood that we are really a clearinghouse. If we are happy, then that goes the minister the go-ahead. So you are right. This is one of the steps that had to be taken before the minister tabled them. But also, I think, in conclusion, accepting that we are all happy, Judge President, we must thank your team for collaborating with the ministry, and that makes life easier for us. So that teamwork has helped. That's why we could finish that. Mr. Bassett, we must also thank you for working together with the legal aid, and that makes us move faster, quicker, and we thank you very much. I guess this brings us to the end of our deliberations. Judge President and Deputy Judge, we thank you very much, and bon voyage.